Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. Rick and I just saw each other a couple of weeks ago, but we haven't talked since then, really. So how's it going, Rick? What have you been up to the past couple of weeks? How are you handling the time change in terms of, you know, going from Arizona to the East Coast and then with daylight savings, and now I've been experiencing rain. It really felt like as soon as we got back from the desert, we were reintroduced to the winter.
Yeah, I mean, it's cold here now. And yeah, the daylight savings part was definitely something that threw me off, like going to work, my first day back at work, and then I leave work and it's dark out when I'm leaving. It's always a weird one. I know, it's the worst, driving home in the dark.
Yes.
But, you know, there's worse things out there. But anyway, it was, yeah, you know, like, right after first pitch Arizona, I had a little bit of a cold, and then I had but had a quick turnaround because we were celebrating our wedding with a couple of friends. We got an Airbnb in New Hampshire, which was really fun. This past weekend was awesome. But now, yeah, back to reality with working every day this week and then moving forward pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Well, you were doing all your fun partying last weekend. I was grinding to finish up my blurbs for Lindy's magazine. I'm doing the reliever rings for that. So if you see Lindy's magazine at whatever store you're at that sells magazines still, yeah, go pick it up, because you know you got Pitcherless guys in there. And there's other people from the industry that I'm sure you'll recognize in there as well, but it's a great product, one of the last physical products that you can purchase in the store, which is really cool. But that's coming out soon. I have no idea when that comes out.
In January or so. Yeah.
Oh, I would have thought it would have been sooner, but I guess I just submitted that and they have to, you know, print it. Yeah, but we are here to discuss relievers, as always. We have a few very minor signings. We'll discuss the decisions that teams and players made with their options for 2025, and then we will go through and draft the remaining free agent relievers, which remaining is mostly the good ones. As I said, the ones that were signed already have been pretty minor, so they probably wouldn't have been on this list anyway, but we'll go through and draft them so we can get a better idea of who are the top relievers on the market and what we can expect from them, what kind of roles they should be having in 2025, and maybe a little bit of fantasy perspective on them as well. But let's start from the top with the news and notes as we discuss the signings from the past couple of weeks, which, as I said, very minor. We had Justin Wilson signing a one-year deal with the Red Sox, Brent Suter signing a one-year deal with the Reds, Aaron Bummer signed a quote-unquote contract extension with the Braves, which was really just a restructuring of his contract. He had two club options for the next two seasons. That will still be the case, I think, but they now have different prices. He'll make $3 million next year and then $10 million in 2026 rather than 7.25 and 7.5 respectively. And then our last signing was TJ McFarland, who signed a one-year deal with the A's. Is there anybody amongst this amongst these four relievers that interests you the most?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still in on Aaron Bummer. I think he pitched more, you know, he definitely pitched better than his you know, ERA says and his whip say. And another year in the Braves system gives me some hope that we'll finally see him. Remember last year he only had one hold going into like September?
Yeah, or something. He finished with two. I mean, like, I'm looking at his numbers right now and he had a pretty solid year, 3.58 ERA and a 28% strikeout rate, but just two holds. So I think Minter gone, he's probably got a much higher chance of getting holds.
The only problem with that is, like, Minter missed like 3 months of the season, maybe 4 months of the season last year.
And Bummer still got no holds.
Yeah, so he's back with pretty much the same crew there. But, I mean, between him and Dylan Lee, it's, you know, those are their two lefties there. So I still would imagine he has a better season, you know, second year there. Contract under his belt for next year, so I'm looking forward to seeing what Bummer does. Justin Wilson's the only one I think Suter re-signed with the Reds, right? And McFarland as well.
Yes.
So Wilson's the only one who's changed teams. There was a point, and I don't remember what it was or when it was, but there was a point last year where Justin Wilson was pretty interesting. Like, I don't know, say pretty interesting, but like as like a bottom 100, like a bottom 20 in my top 100 holds list. Like, he's got something going on right now. And then he fell apart at some point. So I don't know. He's up there in age, but there's, you know, he's had some decent seasons in the past. It's for the Red Sox to take a flyer on him. It's not going to be any sort of money that burns them. I mean, I'm fine with this.
Yeah, he had a 22% strikeout minus walk rate through the first half. So
yeah, that's probably
he had something going for him. But unfortunately, pitching for the Reds in that ballpark led to a lot of home runs and an increased ERA. So unfortunate there. But Justin Wilson, I still think, has a little bit left in the tank. We'll see if that becomes a fantasy impact in 2025. Our next bit of news involves the top two relievers in each, or the top reliever in each respective league, as Emmanuel Clase and Ryan Helsley won the Reliever of the Year awards for the American League and National League, respectively. No surprise there, right?
No, I think the question was in the NL. Obviously, Clase was going to win. I think the NL. Who did we talked about this? I think I went with Helsley. Who did you go with? Iglesias? I think that was the only other guy who, like, like his, you know, his ERA and WHIP, but they're always going to this award is almost always going to go to whoever has the most saves, as long as it's like, you know, their ratios aren't completely out of whack. So yeah, not really a surprise if you were betting on this at all. It's definitely Helsley should have been the favorite there.
Yeah. And then our last bit of news involves potential relievers turning into starters next year. It's been a big topic of conversation. We talked about it, or you talked about it a lot at First Pitch Arizona, but with so many starters turning into relievers and having success, and the other way around as well, recent guys coming to mind include Seth Lugo and Reynaldo Lopez, guys that were pretty solid relievers and then turned into really good starters last year. Seth Lugo finishing in the top three among AL Cy Young award voting. So that's pretty cool. But who are some of the players that might be transitioning from the bullpen to the rotation next year, or might at least get the opportunity to do so?
Yeah. So this is from, you know, there's the, I believe it was Griffin Jacks, is the main topic of this article. And what was it? Jace Tingler, their bench coach, had talked about the opportunity for him to Jax to potentially go back into a starting role. There's no set, you know, timeline on this, or we don't know the facts yet, but there's a chance he gets, you know, stretched out in spring training this year. And to kind of piggyback off that, you know, Eno Saris of The Athletic, obviously, whenever he posts an article, it's worth a look. He wrote about some relievers who could potentially make the jump from the bullpen to the rotation this upcoming season as well. Mentioned Jax, also mentioned Jeff Hoffman, which I think is pretty interesting. You know, Hoffman definitely did not work out as a starter when he was. He was with Colorado. I think he was with Cincinnati for a bit. Toronto maybe was where he started. He just didn't work out as a starter anywhere. And he does have three pitches and he does have pretty good command. So maybe, you know, now he can transition back into a starting role. But interesting to see, especially with him being a free agent, that's kind of like maybe he gets one of those like Reynaldo Lopez, Jordan Hicks type deals. We'll give you a chance to start. If it works out, then great for us, great for you. But we can always move you back into the bullpen if the money's not too crazy. So, interesting name to keep an eye on this offseason, seeing what teams are looking at him and what role they're looking for him to play.
Totally. Yeah. It's sort of disappointing that a couple of the top relievers in baseball, like Griffin Jacks and Jeff Hoffman, who are likely to be huge impactors in fantasy, are, I don't know, sort of getting their roles messed around with, because I don't know, we both have reliever ranks, and I think Hoffman and Jax are definitely inside the top 35 for both of us. Maybe Jax is a little lower because your list was a closer only list, but nonetheless, I still think Hoffman and Jax are, if we're just talking, you know, ranking relievers solely, top 15, top 20 relievers in baseball. So transitioning those guys to the rotation is somewhat disappointing when, you know, before Lugo and Lopez, they weren't going to factor really into our That's fantasy conversation. Yeah, so it's like it's sort of okay because they become more fantasy relevant, but guys like Hoffman and Jax, their fantasy relevance might decline.
Right. I mean, yeah, Reynaldo Lopez and Jordan Hicks weren't exactly, you know, Jeff Hoffman and Griffin Jax as far as relievers go. So, yeah, there is that element, too, where, you know, Hicks and Reynaldo are good relievers, but, like, you know, Hoffman and Jax right now are, you know, some of the best relievers in baseball. So, but that being said, I mean, I do remember us around this time last year, I think talking about either Reynaldo Lopez or Jordan Hicks, and I don't think either one of us thought that they would get a chance to start. And
no,
at least it worked out for Reynaldo. So teams might just see that, and with Hoffman, think that they can do the same. And if that's what he really wants to do, he'll probably have a chance to do that somewhere. So it kind of comes down to the player. As long as one team wants to give him a chance to start, then he'll get that chance if he wants to take it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't think I would be moving either of these guys down your rankings. And by your, I mean our listeners. And that's mostly because even if they're not relieving next year and they are starting, that's still like somewhat valuable. They're still going to be rosterable in fantasy. Right. So, you know, if you would move them down because, their likelihood of getting saves or holds reduces, I think their increase in the win and inning pitch and strikeout departments will probably offset that.
Yeah, I mean, especially this was luck, but my last pick in TGFBI was Garrett Crochet this past season. And I thought I just took him like, oh, maybe he's going to close in Chicago. This was in like January or whatever. So, yeah, you never know. Which kind of is to say, like, yeah, those guys, those tweeners, you don't really know what the role is. Maybe, they're worth something, especially in deeper leagues, late in drafts. Take a shot and see what their role ends up being. And it could that's where you get some high upside potential, like a guy like Crochet or, you know, I bet you Hoffman's going to be pretty cheap up until we find out where he signs and, you know, what his role will be.
Yeah, and even Jax as well, because he's got Jax Yon Duran in front of him. Yeah, I mean, I'd be drafting Jax everywhere with the idea that if nothing changes, he's one of the best relievers in baseball. He's going to get you a handful of saves and great ratios and strikeouts. And if he does become a starter, whether successful or not, you're still getting an extra starter on your 15 league team, where finding rosterable starters is very difficult to find.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this should put Jax on the radar in pretty much every 12 teamer.
Yeah. All right. Let's finish things up with some transactions as we discuss the relievers that either exercised or had their options exercised / declined. We'll start with the guys who will remain with their teams. That includes Chris Stratton, Luke Weaver, Emilio Pagan, Ciano Perez, Jorge Alcala, and Sir Anthony Dominguez. Does one of these guys surprise you more than the rest?
The Dominguez one does a little bit. That was the one I wasn't sure. I mean, Weaver's was easy. Pagan's was a player option, I believe. So, like, obviously he was going to opt into that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what it was. I'm guessing it was a club or player option. But either way, it wasn't too much money. So, Sir Anthony is the one that, like, at $8 million, I wasn't totally sure if the Orioles would spend that money on him. You know, a lot of teams would, but. I guess it's good to see the Orioles committing to, I mean, they have Felix Bautista coming back, but their bullpen still needs help. So, you know, Dominguez wasn't great for Baltimore when he got over there, but he's still someone relatively young who still has like really good stuff plus numbers. I think there's a chance he could be a really good setup guy for them. And then it kind of takes the, you know, Yennier Cano has been just like, used in every situation, and he really could use a bit of a break as far as like being that high leverage setup guy there every now and then. So Dominguez could help alleviate some of that pressure on him.
Yeah, and they'll probably need that with Felix Bautista coming back from Tommy John surgery. Yeah. You can't expect him to be at 100% and able to throw 80 innings or whatever. So having a secondary setup man that can, like you said, take the load off Cano as well as Bautista, I think is definitely smart there. In terms of options being declined, we have Keenan Middleton, Jacob Junis, Drew Smyly, Scott McGuff, David Robertson, Lou Trevino, Phil Maton, Luke Jackson, Danny Coulomb, and Devin Williams. Those, I think, all align with what we would have expected. I think I put Devin Williams in the wrong section. He had his option. Oh, no, he did. He had his option declined so that they could pay him less money.
We could talk about that for a little bit, but it's just, they declined his, they're basically going to pay $1 million less by declining his option for Devin Williams, who's one of the best closers in baseball. And I mean, I think this is, does have a very significant impact here. I do think this means that he's being traded. I would say 90% certain Devin Williams is traded, just like Corbin Burns was in his last year of his deal. I feel like, especially how like they traded Burns and they still had a pretty successful team, playoff team. So I think this does, you know, that kind of has them feeling like, oh, we can trade Devin Williams now too. Like what? And there's also, you know, we've talked about how Devin Williams already doesn't have a great relationship with the Brewers and their front office after what they did with him and his back. This definitely doesn't help them trying to cheap out on $1 million for one of the best relievers in baseball. So I would imagine if either he's going to ask for a trade or the team's going to announce that they're, or there's going to be some sort of news about him being on the block at some point, probably around the winter meetings, we'll see more steam pick up here as far as a trade for him. But I'm pretty convinced that he's gone.
Yeah, I was surprised that the Orioles declined Danny Coulomb's option. I mean, he only tossed 29 innings last year, and he's been a guy who's sort of not thrown a lot of innings over the past few years. That's probably partially because teams like to throw him back into the minors, but also because of injuries. But regardless, over the past 3 years, he has been really good. And I'm talking 2.41 ERA with a strikeout rate of, pretty good. I was messing up.
I'm clicking.
But he is really good, and I feel like they don't have many left-handed options in Baltimore that they can rely on. I mean, they've got they have Keegan Aiken, Gregory Soto, and Sionel Perez, and it's like, would you rather have Sionel Perez or Danny Coulomb? And I would say Coulomb every time.
I would too. The only thing is, we don't know what the medicals look like like the Orioles do, and he missed a lot of time last year with the bone chips in his elbow. He is 35. I wonder if they just don't like something on the medical aspect. But yeah, that was really a cheap option. What was it, like $4 million or so? I would imagine that someone may have even traded for him at that amount. But I don't know. Maybe the 2 year sample size isn't enough for teams to be that excited about him. But it's not even really 2 years. It's 1.25 year. So, I don't know. I wonder if he comes back. Maybe there's something here. Maybe they'll come back on a lesser deal, depending on what the market shows. So I still like Coulomb as long as he looks healthy in spring training. It's a good lefty addition for any bullpen out there.
Agreed. All right. That will wrap up the opening section of the podcast. Next, we'll move into our main topic as we discuss the top free agent relievers and we draft them. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We are entering our free agent relief pitcher draft. Rick and I will each have one bullpen to fill up with 8 guys. So we have a full list of all the top relievers, and we will go through and determine who we like the most. Let me pull up a coin flipper.
Yes.
So that we can determine who goes first. Okay. It's flipping, but I'm going to reflip it. Okay. Call it.
Tails.
It is heads. All right, I'm going first.
Sure it is.
Okay, I'm going first. And I do feel like there is a slight debate. And actually, if I were to pull up my personal rankings of the relievers, I actually think I would do it in a different order than you would. But some of the, I think, topics that we've had already today discussing Jeff Hoffman possibly being a starter and, you know, I don't know, not having a history of closing, that does sort of push him down a little bit, but I still think I'm going to go with Jeff Hoffman as my first pick. He's just been so consistent over the past couple of years, and it really coincides with his shift to the bullpen. I think everybody had high hopes for him when he left Colorado. I feel like everybody has that for any pitcher leaving Colorado, but especially for him being a former first round pick, the ninth overall pick in 2014. But he's been really great for the Phillies the past couple of years. 2.28 ERA, 33% strikeout rate. He's improved in the command department as well. And his stuff is, I wouldn't say the best in baseball, but it's definitely undeniable that it's had success. 85th percentile, 22% swinging strike rate on his slider that he throws 41% of the time. And then also a 16% swinging strike rate on his four seamer. Just really great stuff. He gets an incredible amount of movement on his fastball horizontally, which is really weird. But yeah, the spin, 97th percentile on there. So he's got great stuff and then also throws in a splitter just for fun, but just so good at getting swinging strikes. 18% overall for the 13th best mark in baseball. I really like him because I think he has a better chance of closing than maybe almost anybody in free agency.
Okay. I consider him like this year's Robert Stevenson in a way where it's, and there's, I've been linking those two for like the past 2 years, but, cause they were traded for each other once. So it's fun, but they've also, you know, they're failed high prospect starters who turned into really good relievers in the recent 2 years. And, I would love to see him in a closing role, but they, like we talked about, I feel like either he's going to be starting or he's going to be in some sort of high leverage swing role. But it really depends. Again, he's going to get offers from pretty much, you know, not every team, but a lot of teams will give him, you know, hey, we'd like you, we're interested in you as a starter. We're interested, could be interested in you as a closer. We could be interested in you as a high leverage role. It all depends on what he's really looking for. And, you know, what he wants to do, I guess, or where he wants to be as far as with a contender or with a, you know, with a team that's not really built to win yet. So this offseason for him could go any way. We don't know. We're sitting here. We have no idea what he wants to do. So, yeah, I mean, the stuff's incredible. And I do, it would be kind of interesting. I mean, his changeup's not, that's the thing is like, he's really a fastball slider guy.
Yeah.
Changeup's okay. I don't really see him as a three pitch. I looked into him when we were doing like our presentation for Arizona as a potential, you know, starter again. And I don't know, maybe he feels comfortable that the splitter just changeup came a long way this year. It's not really a great third offering. So I would almost rather him also add like a cutter if he's going to make the transition. And then now all of a sudden we're getting into all sorts of, you know, changes to what we already know is a really good two pitch reliever. So yeah, I'd rather see him stick it out in the bullpen. And yeah, he definitely the fastball slider. Absolutely. He could be a closer for a lot of teams. So yeah, I hope that's where he ends up. Cause then I'll get a lot of shares of him this draft season.
Yeah, totally. All right. You're on the clock.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. I guess you can make the argument that Hoffman and Tanner Scott are the same. But yeah, I feel like you think Hoffman's got a better chance to close out games than Tanner Scott, who's closed out games before. I know, and you're gonna say because he's left-handed, but
yes, I am.
But I don't. I would almost prefer the lefty righty thing. I would prefer. I don't know. I think I would prefer having experience closing out games if I'm signing one of them to be the closer. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had It's similar to Hoffman. They've both kind of broke out in the past 2 years. So Scott, again, had an unbelievable season with a 1.75 ERA, 1.0 whip, 145 stuff plus. It's still an electric fastball slider combination, 5.46 PLV. That and the stuff plus are both top 10. And, you know, that's with, and I remember, because I was so high on him last year, and he had that really rough stretch at the beginning of the season, and like Ozuna hit that bomb off him on it. It was a good pitch too, and Ozuna hit a 3-run home run off him. I'm like, all right, I was so wrong on Scott. It's over. I feel bad for everyone I told to be on him, and then he just took off from there. Just like unhittable stuff. The fastball, 97 miles per hour from the left side. Good spin rate. He's that Hava that Nick always talks about, the horizontal vertical approach angle. I think that's right.
Height adjusted
vertical. Yeah, that's what height adjusted vertical approach angle. 1.9. So that's up in the elite territory. And the slider's not even that great, but his fastball is so good that the slider is just like solid enough to be a pretty devastating number two option for him. So. With all these guys, it really matters where they land. But if I'm giving money to a closer, I would prioritize Scott over Hoffman at this point. But I do get the argument for Hoffman as well. I think they're both pretty close.
Yeah, I have more argument against Scott, but it's not against him being a closer. It has more to do with his success. And a lot of that, I think, resides in the outlier season in terms of control last season in 2023, when he had a 7.8% walk rate, inducing a massive breakout. And, you know, this was a guy that was not having success throughout his career with the Orioles and then finally broke out in Miami because he started throwing strikes. And then that didn't stick. Which is hard to sort of determine from Scott's season last year because he was so up and down with his control. When I was writing my blurbs for Lindy's, I was trying to determine, you know, why is his walk rate 12%, but like it didn't feel like he was walking that many batters. And I determined that it was so skewed to his early performances where he was struggling with his control. So if you look at him from June on, 9.3% walk rate and a 31% strikeout rate.
Yeah.
Even
May on it was 9.5% walk rate.
Yeah.
And a 31.2% K rate. I'll take that from him. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. So it's like super skewed by those early high walk rates, but I still have some reservations regarding his control. I mean, you know, he did pitch for two teams last year. So there's that part of it. When he was with the Padres, his walk rate was actually 8%. So there's something there as well that maybe switching teams helped him a little. Yeah. But there is the part of me that's a little bit skeptical because he clearly didn't reproduce what he did in 2023. And not that I would have expected him to do that. I think what we saw last year after April is more indicative of what we should have expected, right? Like more like a 10% walk rate rather than, you know, going all the way back up to 14% or whatever, like he was before. Get a sort of middle ground where he's no longer the, you know, top five reliever in baseball because he's got such good control, but he's more of like a 10 to 15 guy, right? Because his control is still going to hold him back a little. The whip's not going to be that great. We saw last year the whip at 1.13, which is good, but that was with a 1.75 ERA. So he's clearly going to be a guy that's probably going to have an ERA closer to 3 and a whip that's not super great, but the strikeouts are so good. And I think, you know, basically equal closing opportunities as Hoffman, and Hoffman's, you know, uncertainty with what he wants to do next year, I think, you know, adds even more haziness there and in Scott's favor. But I think for me, a big part of it was, okay, can he continue to repeat the command, or is it going to be something like April where he's struggling with his command and then maybe it bleeds into the whole year and, you know, we see the old Tanner Scott again. I believe that we have a new Tanner Scott that's slightly better at controlling his pitches, but it's not the sub 8% walk rate that we saw in 2023.
No, yeah, I just need him to be at 10% or lower, or even a little bit higher. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, Now, I don't want to compare him to like Devin Williams, but Devin Williams sort of like lives with a 12.5% walk rate, but that's Devin Williams. But I do think like 10% will be fine for him if that's if he can just stay there. And I think he can. I think he should be able to. But it depends on where he goes. He could. Yeah. It's again, these free agents landing spot means everything.
But yeah, that's the uncertainty with me between him and Hoffman is that Scott's skills to me are more suspect than Hoffman's. Like I feel great about how Hoffman's going to pitch if he's a reliever next year, but all the uncertainty resides in where is he going to pitch? What role is he going to pitch in? Is he going to succeed in that role where it's like Tanner Scott is either going to be a setup man or a closer, whether or not he can control his pitches is the factor there. And I think that one is sort of, I don't know, less certain one that we can, I don't know. I think it's as uncertain as Hoffman's role. So I see them as 1A, 1B, but it's more of a skill thing with Scott than a role thing.
Yeah, I can buy that, but for some reason it feels like Scott's just been, I mean, he hasn't been doing it longer, but just the fact that he's been closing out games, I think is a big difference, especially in free agency.
All right. Well, let's move on to the second round, I guess this would be. Let's do a snake for the first pick, right? So you'll get a back-to-back now, and then we'll switch off.
Okay. I want Kirby Yates then. I don't even know if you're going to take him, but I didn't think you were. And everyone's scared off by his age, but I mean, this guy was just absolutely dominant last year, and there was just no letdown from start to finish for him. And it's not like if this was a guy that hadn't, you know, closed out games and been like a dominant closer from 2019 to until he had Tommy John in 2022, 2021. The age is a little scary, but if we're talking about just for next season, if Yates is going to be closing somewhere, which he should be, he definitely deserves a chance to close again. Texas would be a great place to go back to, but there's other opportunities for him. I mean, even like Philly, like imagine Philly adding him just for a year. He could put up really good numbers there. So yeah, I mean, last year was crazy. 1.17 ERA, 0.83 WHIP, 36% strikeout rate, 2.51 PCRA, 36.5% zone contact minus O swing rate. So he's just like doing it in all sorts of ways here. And I do worry is because then if anyone was at First Pitch Arizona, they learned just how much Nick Pollock hates splitters. And that's, you know, that's the Kirby Yates feature. And I will make the caveat that I feel the same way about starters as Nick does with splitters, but with relievers, I'm not as, worried, I guess, because this is your put out pitch. This is your, swing and miss pitch. That's fine. Since not everyone has a dominant breaking ball, sometimes it's a splitter. Sometimes it's a changeup for closers or relievers. So I'm fine with it with Yates. That's always been his, you know, his best pitch and his top secondary option. I don't see him falling off a cliff next year. I mean, it could happen, but I just don't, there's nothing in the profile from last year that really scares me away from him this season. I think you might be able to get a discount on him just because of age and people thinking it was just like a 1 year fluke, but it really wasn't. Like 2019 was just as good as last season.
Yeah. 2019 was 5 years.
It was 5 years ago.
Yeah. No, I totally agree that, you know, he was really great last year and that, you know, he's not going to repeat last year, but he's definitely got a good chance of doing so.
Right. Yeah.
But on top of that, like, yeah, you mentioned like people are going to be scared of his age, which I think is not a factor until you start to factor in all the injuries he had for the previous 3 years. Like from 2020 through 2022, he pitched 11 and a third innings and like wasn't good when he was on the field. I mean, of course he was injured, but that on top of the luck that he had last year was insane. He had a 168 BABIP and an 88% left on base rate. So that suggests a pretty significant step back. I mean, even if it's like you know, two runs. He's still got a 3.17 ERA, which is really good. And the strikeouts are still going to be there. But there is some concern from me that, you know, we see a big inflation to his BABIP, at least to his career levels or, you know, league average levels. If he's closer to 270 rather than 170, that's almost double the hits, and you're getting a whip that's no longer 0.83 but 1.20, because he's a guy who walks 12% of the batters he faces. So that's
I do wonder just on the BABIP and left on base. I don't think that was necessarily fluky. I mean, he had a 24.8% ICR rate, which is true. ideal contact rate, which I saw that. I had to double take because none of these other relievers are even close to that. And I mean, even that in and of itself is a little bit fluky, but I think it just shows how good he is at, you know, eliminating hard contact with his splitter. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah, keep continue. I just wanted to
That's a great point. That's a great point. Definitely sometimes contact suppression is a repeatable skill. And for somebody like Yates, where you look at his previous years, like 2023, his ICR was 13% higher than it was last year. So yeah, of course he's going to not be at that same level. He's not going to produce another sub 25% ICR. But I still think what your point suggests, that he will fall off, but it's not going to be as significant as a 169 BABIP would suggest. Like, he's not going to fall all the way back to league average in his contact suppression. He's probably still going to be a guy who can be an elite contact suppressor, but probably not the best in baseball, right? So next year, definitely a slight reduction at the very least in his ratios, but I don't expect the strikeouts to disappear. I mean, he's a big swing strike guy. He's got two pitches that are pretty dominant in that regard. Mostly his fastball, 18% swing strike rate, and like splitters are just so good at inducing swing strikes. And he wants people to swing at a splitter because when they make contact, it goes nowhere. So yeah, I still see a path for success for Kirby, especially if he's on a team where he's allowed to close. But regardless, there will be a slight step back. I think, you know, some people are going to be projecting a larger one than others.
I think you take 2023, 24, and you kind of average those out. And then that's what you get next year. And I don't know what that is, but it's
because 2.21 ERA, I mean, and that's a 20% strikeout minus walk rate.
Not a 20%. He had a 31.5% strikeout minus walk rate. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
So it's still elite there. And, you know, I don't expect the ERA to be 2.21, but if he's like a 2.75 or like a 3.15 or something like that with a strikeout rate over 33%, that's pretty good as long as he's closing.
Yeah, I guess it all comes down to where he's going in your drafts. But I think there's some potential discounts here, especially before he signs, because I feel like if he does sign somewhere where we know he's going to close, he's going to shoot up draft boards. Probably not too high, but I would imagine he goes around, you know, 10 to 12 area or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. All right, then I guess I am up next, and I think this one might be a bit surprising, and it's more so based on role than skill, but I'm going to take Kenley Jansen next. This is, like I said, from a more of a fantasy standpoint here. His likelihood of closing may be higher than anybody else in free agency. I know I said that about Jeff Hoffman. I was more insinuating with Hoffman that he has like the stuff to close. Jansen is just a closer. Like, you're not going to sign him, and he's not going to sign a contract where he's not a closer.
No.
And even still, he's so consistent. I think there's this perception that the past couple of years have not been kind to him. And while he has struggled with, you know, health issues and maintaining his role, staying on the field, his command, his velocity, you know, it feels like so uncertain, but he's younger than Kirby Yates, and he's been really good over the past few years. Last year was his 12th straight full season with at least 25 saves, which is, I mean, that's in and of itself incredible. But he became basically a one pitch pitcher with his cutter. His slider's not doing much anymore, but like the cutter is still incredible somehow. But he's making it work. I mean, his velocity declined a little bit down to 92, but that was in line with 2022 when he was still pitching really well for the Braves. And like I said, I just don't see him going to a place where he's not a closer. And if you really, really, you know, mess with the stats, you can get him on a list of just three relievers with a ERA under 3.5, a strikeout rate north of 28%, a single digit walk rate, and at least 10 saves. It seems like a lot, but it's pretty simple. 3.50 ERA, 28% strikeout rate, single digit walk rate, and at least 10 saves. He was one of three relievers to do that last year. So I think that by itself suggests that, okay, yeah, he's pretty safe. He's going to get me some saves. He's not going to have a super high ceiling, but his ability to still go out there and produce a solid amount of strikeouts while not hurting you in the ratios and getting you at least 25 saves is so hard to find in free agency.
Yeah, those are good points. My only concern with him and compared to Yates is I just the trends, and even though they're both old and whatnot, I just feel like Jansen's stuff is starting to take a step in the wrong direction. But it really depends on with him landing where his landing spot would be. I would like to see him go back to like a pitcher friendly park, just to kind of ease him into wherever his next job will be. I think there's a lot of hard contact coming from him now. There's, you know, ERA indicators weren't great. Not missing a ton of bats, even though he does have that strikeout rate. We'll see what's left in the tank, but you're right. He's going to be closing wherever it is. It's at this point, I mean, he's got a World Series ring. He's probably, I would imagine he's just trying to, you know, surpass Lee Smith for third most saves all time and probably call it a career. So I expect him to sign with a bad team that has no closer. I'd probably better than the White Sox, but like, I don't know. There's someone out there. One of those AL Central teams, maybe.
I don't think he would go to the White Sox even if they offered him the closer role for the rest of his life.
Yeah, I've said it a million times, and I hope I'm right because I keep saying it. But the Royals were interested in Kenley Jansen last year, so maybe now they offer him a 1-year deal or a 2-year deal.
That'd be terrible for Urseg.
It would be, but I also, realistically, the Royals probably would be better off of Urseg and.
You know who would sign him?
What? Who?
The Angels.
Yeah. Go back to L.A. Yeah, yeah. I could see that 100%. That's a good prediction, too.
I'm locking it in.
All right. I got Royals. You got Angels. I feel like if it's not one of those teams, I don't. Yeah. I feel like it's going to be.
We're both off the podcast. Yes.
No, those two teams feel they make a lot of sense. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're up next. Next guy.
Fine. You let me take Clay Holmes. I guess I'll take Clay Holmes, who, again, don't know if he's going to be closing, but I will, at this point of the year, more interested in upside, especially because Jansen, you're probably right. Jansen's like the last other guy, the last option that's going to be closing. So now at this point, yeah, give me Clay Holmes, who has a pretty good track record as a closer. Finished the year with a 3.01 xFIP, 33.5% CSW, 135 stuff plus. There's still a lot of good in his arm, and I've talked about it a lot that he's better off as a non-closer, but that doesn't mean that other teams see it that way. All it takes is one team to see him as a closer, throw a bunch of money at him, and you know, he's back to closing for someone next year. So he's definitely going to get a healthy contract here. He's still a really good reliever as a ground ball specialist. The stuff just isn't like his first like couple years with the Yankees, he was really missing bats at a high rate. And it's like, well, he's not just a ground ball guy. He's actually like a swinging strike guy. And that doesn't really seem to be the case anymore. It's taken a step back, but just because the swing and miss isn't there doesn't mean he's still a good reliever. Sinker is obviously great. Sweeper is promising. I've said the Reds could be a team here. Pitching in that ballpark, get a lot of ground balls. Mm-hmm. Hopefully the infield defense is better next year with, I don't know what they're really doing as far as positions there, but, the infield defense should be, should be good as long as McLean stays at second base and you have Elliott short. Yeah, I like Holmes just because there's consistency here, but also a little bit of upside because maybe the CSW is still good, stuff plus is good, so maybe the strikeouts can get back a little, or the strikeout rate and the swing and miss stuff can get back a little bit. And I do think he can put up a better season overall than he did this past season, where he still was pretty productive and had, what do you have, like 28 saves? Or he might have had 30 saves.
30. Again.
Yeah. So, I could see him, he'll be productive wherever he is, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And that's because of the ground balls, the number one ground ball pitcher in baseball, 67.4% on the ground ball rate. That's number one amongst pitchers with at least 50 innings pitched. But yeah, he was pretty crazy last year. And I have another stat here, similar to the one that Kenley Jansen had, but a lot less signifiers here. he was one of just three relievers with at least 20 saves and an ERA under four across each of the past three seasons. I mean, that's consistent. And like, those are not, I mean, a four ERA is not a high bar to go under, no. But the consistency in the closer role combined with the teams allowing him to close, I think is a big indicator. Of course, he was just on one team the past 3 years, but still there's two other relievers in baseball across the past 3 years that have recorded 20 saves and a sub four ERA across the past three seasons. So that shows consistency and the ability to close for Holmes. And I think that, mm-hmm. increases the likelihood he closes next year, as well as his hot finish to September and the playoffs. I think that will, give teams more comfortability picking him up and sign him as a closer. But yeah, there's still some uncertainty with, can he increase his strikeout rate? Is he going to be a closer? But that's left up to determine. I think he's very clearly the third or fourth. Or what number are we on? One, two, three, four, third, fourth, or fifth best reliever available. I think there's an argument next to Clay Holmes. And definitely, I think purely as a reliever, he's better than Jansen. But when it comes to fantasy, you got to factor in the saves. And, that's not up to him. But Clay Holmes, definitely really good. So now that we're through five rounds, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relievers. We are entering the second half of our free agent reliever draft. We're entering, I don't even know how we would determine what round we're in, but this is pick number 6. I am on the clock, and I think I'm going to take Blake Treinen. He really surprised me last year. He hadn't pitched in a long time, but when he pitched, he looked so good, and I didn't realize how long he was out there. I mean, he debuted so late into the season that it felt like he had a small sample size, but the dude pitched 46 and two-thirds innings of sub-2 ERA baseball, and it's not like his strikeout stuff disappeared either. 30% strikeout rate, 6% walk rate, that's really good. Sub-1 whip. And then in the playoffs, he was equally as good and was trusted in the ninth inning a lot of times. Three saves throughout the playoffs. He tossed 12 innings with a 2.19 ERA, and his strikeout rate was 33%. So really great stuff from Treinen, and he's still dominating with that sinker-slider combo, and it's really crazy if you watch him pitch. I mean, Pitching Ninja loves anytime Treinen takes the mound, because you can do the overlay with the sinker and the slider.
It's crazy.
And it looks incredible, but he's still so good. I mean, returning from a 2-year absence, we see a 1.5 mile per hour drop in fastball velocity, maybe even more than 1.5, but not a reduction in his success, which I think bodes well for him next year, even as a guy who's going to be entering his age 37 season. I don't think he's going to be closing, but the stuff is still clearly there. And I think if a team gives him an opportunity either to close and then be traded at the deadline or to be a legit setup man, I think he's going to be pretty relevant in saves plus holds leagues.
Yeah. I mean, even with the velo taking a hit, he was still so good last year.
Exactly.
24.5% K minus walk, 2.67 Sierra. He's definitely, after his postseason run, he's certainly going to have offers to close out games too. What he wants to do, again, we don't know, but there will be opportunities for him to close out games this offseason, I bet. So Yeah, that's a good one. That's actually who I was going to take as well. So you threw me, because at this point, after like Holmes, for me, it's like a bunch of dart throws and I don't know. If we're talking fantasy, Paul Sewald, maybe, because again, he's got closing experience, and I don't want to talk about Paul Sewald though. All right, I'll talk about Paul Sewald. He was just really bad last year, and it's really,
we're gonna have to talk about him either way.
I know. But yeah, I feel like a team could see him as a closer since he's done it. Yeah, the stuff deteriorated a little bit. Not completely, though. I think there's a chance he could bounce back. A lot of hard contact last year. Was not getting swing and misses like he usually does. He still finished, though, with a 20% K-minus walk rate, 118 stuff plus, 5.2 PLV. So it's not like the end of, I don't think the end of the world for Sewald right now. I think he's still got, might have another year or two in him where he can be effective. He lost some velo on his fastball, but that was, velo for him was never a big, a big deal anyway.
Yeah.
Still the pitch still had a elite 1.9, Hava and a great spin rate. So, the sweeper is still great. It would be nice to see him add something this offseason, like a changeup or a cutter, just to be a little bit more effective against lefties, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, again, he's one of those guys who experience as a closer could come into play here and get him a chance. Like one of those, you know, Tigers or Royals situations could be really, really nice for him. I think like the Tigers for him was is a nice fit. I don't know. We'll see where he ends up, but I would like to see him. I like Paul Sewald, so I'd like to see him close, and I would like to see him, you know, show that last year was a fluke, because, he's just a cool dude. It's his time to pitch. It's Paul Sewald time.
Yes, it is. You know? Yeah, I'm sort of worried that if he's not a closer, that he'll have no fantasy relevance. Like,
no, he won't. Even in like holds
leagues. Like he's not going to get holds, or even if he is getting a few holds, he's not going to be good enough.
He's like, he's going to be one of those guys that just fades into like a middle relief.
Yep.
Abyss. And the strikeouts aren't going to be good enough. The ratios aren't going to be quite good enough. Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah. So definitely keep an eye out for his landing spot this offseason, because that will be the determining factor for his fantasy relevance. I will make the next pick, and I'm making this one based solely off of some tweets I've seen, and it's Yimi Garcia, who had a great year last year, and I feel like he just continues to get better. But last year, 32% strikeout rate, 3.46 ERA. There was a period where he was recording saves, but I think the biggest factor here is that Yimi Garcia is one of the biggest risers in the update to, you know, Saris's Stuff Plus. So I think that bodes well not only for his success next year, but also for teams being interested in him, because I'm sure they have even better models than Stuff Plus, which like I can't even imagine. Imagine that. But like PLV or something. But Yimi Garcia definitely is really good, and he continues to get better. Added half a mile per hour to his fastball, but the biggest thing was the introduction of a sweeper last year, which not necessarily like the best pitch of all time, but what it did was provide more horizontal glove side movement to his arsenal, which he was sorely lacking as a guy who was relying on a four seamer, curveball, and sinker. You have a lot of north south and arm side movement, but not a lot of glove side movement. And I think the addition of a sweeper allowed Garcia to get more swinging strikes consistently. But there is the factor that, you know, 205 BABIP, pretty lucky. But as we spoke on with Kirby Yates, it's a sub 30% ICR. So Yimi Garcia, I think, is definitely underrated, especially for somebody that's about to be in his mid-30s. I don't think he's going to close anywhere unless he really doesn't care about winning. But Yimi Garcia, I think, is an underrated guy who is going to get a lot more attention throughout the offseason.
Yeah, that's a good one. Probably not a closer, but should be on the radar for pretty much every contending team this offseason. Mm-hmm. He's really, and even at 34, he's like still what's the word? He's still like updating him. He's still like getting better and changing his arsenal. Mm-hmm. And now I remember he used to be like a solid closer with like the Marlins, and it's, but like he doesn't strike out anyone. And now he's got a 32% strikeout rate. And his, you know, 5.31 PLV. I mean, his stuff is just like taking a huge step forward. And yeah, it's with those breaking balls. I don't like it lists like the curveball, sweeper, and slider. I'm not sure how much overlap there is between the three. They're all about the same velocity, but end of the day, his breaking balls are all really good. Get a ton of swings and misses, called strikes. He's a guy who should be a setup man for any team that's contending next year. I feel like he's the type of, you know, 2-year deal type reliever every team should be in on.
Totally.
All right, who you got next?
All these veterans. I'll go with AJ Minter.
Okay.
And I don't even know what to say about AJ Minter, but I mean, we just didn't see enough from him last year. I guess 34 innings is a pretty good sample size, and he was fine. 2.62 ERA, 1.02 WHIP. But the strikeouts took a hit, and I feel like we can pretty much, you know, chalk that up to his back injury, which is the one thing that obviously is really scary of when we start dealing with, serious back injuries. So, it'll be interesting. I don't think, again, with just similar to like Yimi Garcia, I don't think Minter gets a chance to save games next year. He could. He's got 43 or what's he have? 15. He's got a pretty good amount of. He's got 36 career saves. So, you know, it's not like he hasn't closed out games, but again, left-handed, probably more of a, you know, it feels like someone like the Dodgers gives him a 1-year deal, coming back from an injury, see what he can do.
It was a hip injury.
If
that helps at all.
I don't think so. That's still,
he had surgery over the offseason as well.
So hopefully he's over that, but those can definitely be tricky. But yeah, he's a really good reliever from the left side when healthy. And I think as far as lefties go, once you get past Scott, it's, you know, really just Minter or Aroldis Chapman. So I'll take Minter.
I would take Minter as well. Yeah, I feel like the consistency shown over the past few years is sort of unmatched from a lefty setup man, and his ability to not only succeed as a setup man, but to fill in as the closer, like when Raisel Iglesias was out at the beginning of last year and in spurts in 2022, I feel like that makes him more appealing to free agent suitors because, you know, I don't think they're going to sign him as a closer, but having a guy that you know can fill in at a moment's notice definitely gives you a higher ceiling in terms of your free agent deal, but definitely want to see Minter return to full health next year, even though he wasn't bad dealing with an injury last year, you know, sub-3 ERA, 2.62. But the strikeouts clearly fell off. And so he was definitely dealing with something. His fastball velocity fell over a mile per hour as well on mostly his four seamer, which is weird. His cutter remained at the same velocity, but nonetheless, I would love to see Minter back at his full peak, which was really consistent and reliable across the past few years. Next pick, not going to take Chapman. So I think I'm going to go with David Robertson, which I think is maybe a little controversial. He's old.
No, I don't think so.
But he's been so good for so long. And so many people, I think, forget that because he's not closing, right? Like he did close in 2022 and 2023, but both times it was only in the first half. So people start to forget, like, oh yeah, he was actually being signed as a closer as a 37 and 38 year old. and was pitching so well that he was being targeted by teams that are trying to make the playoffs. Didn't really work out for the Marlins in 2023, but really worked out for the Phillies in 2022, and remaining with the Rangers in 2024 throughout the whole year, he continues to succeed. And it's crazy to see a guy of his age putting up a 33% strikeout rate with an even 3 ERA and a 1.1 whip. He's just been so consistent for so long. I wouldn't expect him to close next year, but every single team, I think, is going to be in on David Robertson.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly like you said. There's either the contenders want him to come in and be a setup guy, or you have the lesser teams who want him to come in and
cellar dwellers.
I don't know, what to call them to be nice, but he can come in, close out games through July, and then they trade him. I figure every team, and he's not gonna break the bank. He might get $10 million. He's 39, but the stuff still, it's that cutter, man. The cutter, the knuckle curve, it's a great combo. It's not gonna age. It's not a combo that's gonna like age poorly. He doesn't rely on velo. He's just, cutter. It's similar to obviously Kenley Jansen with his cutter, but also I don't want to say like Mariano Rivera, but that's where he learned the cutter from. Class A. Class A is a guy who should probably, but Class A's cutter relies on velo as well. So it's a little,
I see what you're saying.
I feel like Robertson should be a safe holds target for next year. I don't know if he closes, but he's someone who I thought this past offseason, he's probably, especially with how bad he was with the Marlins, I'm like, that's probably it for him. And he was so good with the Rangers. I did not see that coming. So I will not rule him out. I will not rule him out this year as well.
All right. You're on the clock.
Who we got left? I guess I'll talk about Carlos Estevez. We've both been avoiding him as well.
But not for the same reason as we're avoiding Chapman.
I know, but I mean, we're avoiding a closer who had a 2.45 ERA and a 0.91 WHIP last year, and a 5.27 PLV. PLV likes him, but that's pretty much the only things I can say earned as of is like a top 20 closer role or whatever. Everything else under the hood is really just, there's so many alarm bells going off here. So he just did not miss bats at all last year, especially in the second half when we went over to Philly. CSW went down to 24.4%, 23.6% strikeout rate, 4.09 xFIP in the second half. Just a ton of hard contact, bottom 20 percentile on average exit velocity, hard hit rate, barrel rate. And that comes with, ground ball rates at 32.2%. Chase rates are only at 24.4%. So he's just giving up a ton of hard contact and he's not missing bats. And that just, it's never going to end well. So for that reason, I'm just fully out on Estevez. But given what's left and the fact that we're trying to make this into like a fantasy closer thing, I mean, he could get a chance to close next year. That's definitely not, wouldn't be crazy to think. And if he lands in a good, good spot, a good pitcher's ballpark, especially, I think he could be all right again, like the Tigers, Royals, those situations.
Yeah. I think what causes me to be concerned is that he was a completely different pitcher last year. I don't know if you remember when we were following it early in the season, but like he wasn't walking anybody. And it was sort of the same as like Jose Alvarado 2 years ago, where we were like, oh my gosh, Jose Alvarado is the best closer of all time because he's not walking anybody. But it was like Carlos Estevez was just like, what if I never walked anybody and just let them hit it all the time? And then they did and nothing happened. But I think that was really lucky. As you're pointing out, he's a guy that ninth percentile ground ball rate. He's a guy that relies so heavily on fly ball. So when you get a home run to fly ball ratio of 7.9%, which is in the 78th percentile, you're going to have a pretty good time because, you know, balls aren't leaving the yard, but they will going forward. I wouldn't expect him to run another home run to fly ball rate that low. And being so reliant on balls in play is super risky, especially when you're a guy that doesn't really reduce loud contact as well as others. But his stuff is also not something that blows me away. Like, his fastball's pretty average. I mean, PLV likes it. Maybe it's slightly above average, but I don't like his breakers. His slider's a called strike pitch, and that should be your swinging strike pitch. And I don't know why he has a changeup. It's good in terms of swinging strikes, but I think that's just because it's catching people off guard. But yeah, I think there's too much to be said about, okay, the success he had last year is tied to him being a completely different pitcher. Can we expect him to be that completely different pitcher again? Or what are we going to get from him? Is he going to be a guy that walks nobody and is just relying so heavily on luck on balls in play? Or is he going to be a guy that starts to strike guys out again? Because that's what made him interesting in 2023. Even though we didn't like him, he was still a guy that was striking out some batters. But to cut your walk rate nearly in half and find that much more success without the reintroduction of swinging strikes, I think is somewhat concerning. And I think teams are smarter than we give them credit for. And I don't see a team signing him to be a closer.
I would agree. I think maybe it would have to be a really bad team, I think, to sign him to be a closer, or some situation where, similar to Philly, where it, like, he's brought in, but there's other really good relievers who may not be closer there. Can't think of one off the top of my head, but some situation like that is the only thing I can think of.
Mm-hmm. All right. I will make the next pick and I will take him off the board. I'll take Aroldis Chapman. I would prefer not to take Aroldis Chapman. If this was a fantasy draft, I would not draft Aroldis Chapman. But I think we have to do our due diligence as a relief pitcher podcast and talk about one of the hardest throwers of all time in Aroldis Chapman, who, you know, he's lost a step. He's not the same Aroldis Chapman he was with the Reds, but he's still so good at striking guys out, even if his fastball velocity is under 98 miles per hour on average, which to me, that's concerning, but I don't think it matters because I don't think it's going to change his profile at all. Like, I think we can lock him in for 35% strikeout rate, 14% walk rate, and an ERA over 3.5 and a whip over 1.25.
Yeah, I mean, the whip's going to always be an issue. He's going to walk people. But, you know, the save total last year, 14, was his best since 2021. Mm-hmm. Maybe teams see that and like, hey, he can still close out games. You know, he made it through a full season with a 37.1% strikeout rate. 33% CSW. The stuff's still good, even if the fastball takes a little bit of a hit, it's still really good. He finished the season strong, 32.7% K to walk rate, 1.84 xFIP since after the All-Star break. So yeah, I think he's still, you know, the interesting thing is going to be, is he, you know, he went with the Royals and the Pirates last year. It's like, as kind of a rehabable asset, where contenders weren't really willing to pay him. Is that change now after two seasons? I know he ended up with Texas 2 years ago at the deadline, but, you know, is he able to just like latch on to a contender right away, or does he just end up with like another cellar dweller, as you say, to start the year and just kind of lingers in some mediocre pitching staff?
Yeah, that'll definitely be something to keep an eye on in terms of how we value Chapman from a fantasy standpoint. I think either way, he's probably going to be a pretty significant factor in save plus holds leagues, but only if you can look past his off the field concerns.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right.
You're up.
I will, just to prove a point. So if we're trying to actually build bullpens, there was another lefty on the board. He just isn't left-handed, and that is Tommy Canley, Mr. Changeup. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's basically left-handed, just throwing 90% changeups at this point. So, and it's a devastating pitch. There's a reason why he throws it so much. Mm-hmm. And he throws it the same side as well, but he's really an asset against lefties and able to, at this day and age, he's not just a specialist. He can pitch to both sides of the plate. So I think what type of role he lands, it's definitely not going to be a closing role. I would imagine. Yeah, he's probably going to be a setup role for a good team, like pretty low value, maybe $5 or $6 million a year, something like that. So yeah, he's a nice back end piece as like a setup middle relief option. But that's kind of where we're at this point in the draft. Yeah. We're out of the closer realm now.
That's right. Yeah, I think something to keep an eye on with Tommy Conley or Canley, I think first is clearly the injury issues. He's not a guy that's going to throw 60 innings. He's only done that 3 times in his career, and he's never done it in back-to-back seasons. And we haven't even seen him cross 43 innings since 2019. So it's been a while since Canley was able to stay on the field. But on top of that, his four-seamer dropped a full mile per hour from 2023, which didn't hurt him. He was still able to pitch pretty well, 2.11 ERA, and was on the playoff roster for the Yankees. But that would likely mean heavier reliance on the changeup, which also lost a mile per hour. I think maintaining that difference in velo is important, but I think we may see him lean even more heavily on the changeup, which would allow,
for sure,
I think, batters to see him as more predictable, which I wouldn't say is great for somebody with such a hittable fastball.
I would have thought so too, but he threw like almost 100% changeups in the playoffs, and no one hit him. So, I see that 80 to 90% next year. I would not be surprised.
Changeup version of Robert Suarez or Matt Whistler.
Yeah, I mean, whatever works, and it clearly works. It's a filthy pitch, and because he always has that fastball, he can sneak by you if you're not giving it a chance. So it's working.
All right, I will go next, and I'm going to take Jose Leclerc. I think he's going to be super fantasy relevant, but his ceiling, I think, is definitely higher than most of the guys still available. And that's not just because he's only going to be 31 next year and all the other guys we've been talking about are in their mid to late 30s. But Jose Leclerc last year, 4.32 ERA, not super great, but the ERA estimators suggest, he's more in line with what he was doing the previous 2 years, where he was overperforming his ERA estimators. But 2022 and 2023 combined for a 2.75 ERA, and that was striking out 28% of the batters he faced. He improved that to 31% in 2024 while not increasing his walk rate too much. He's still a guy who walks too many guys, who's not going to be good in the whiff department, but nonetheless, rarely are you going to find a guy with the ability to post sub-3 ERAs while striking out 30% of the batters he faces. So I think there's something to be said about Leclerc being sort of a sleeper save candidate, depending on which team he ends up on, because the swinging strikes are there. 17% swinging strike rate, that's legit. That's a suggestive of a strikeout rate north of 30%, so we can believe in that. And we haven't really seen a decline in his stuff, and he's been able to stay on the field for 3 consecutive years as well. So I think if he ends up on a cellar dweller, but not as the closer, I feel like he's the type of guy that could have a lot of success in the first month and then take over the closer role.
Yeah, there's a lot of very variables here and where for him. I've seen that the Red Sox were linked to him, which I would like a lot. I feel like coming in here with this pitching staff, with his stuff, I feel like that could be a really good fit and potentially a chance for him to close as well. But yeah, even like the past 3 seasons, I mean, he's had swing strike rates over 17% and the K rates over 27% as well each season, which was at 31% this year. I don't care the ERA and WHIP. I'm willing to look past it. The BABIP was abnormally high for him this year. He did let up a lot of hard contact, but this is a guy who's always been in the Rangers organization too. He's about to turn 31. Let's get him, get him out of that organization, get him some fresh eyes, somewhere else and see what they can do with him, because the stuff's still really good. He's always had swing and miss stuff. I just, yeah, let's see. Like the right team, the right organization could make him into a really good reliever again.
Totally. All right. I think it is time for your final pick.
Yeah. I mean, let's go with, I'll put Jorge Lopez because I put him on here. Because obviously we'll start with like the whole Mets debacle. And that was not a good look. Obviously that was bad. That can't happen. And I thought that was the end of his season. And like, but I mean, the Cubs signed him and he was really, really, really good with the Cubs, like a totally different pitcher.
Like almost the best he's ever been.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have this off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure he led all pitchers in CSW over the second half, or all relievers. Whoa. So yeah, like there's something, and he was hurt. He did get hurt, and that's a concern. But as you know, where we are right now in picking relievers, it's like, yeah, give me a chance on what he was doing in the second half last year once he ended up with the Cubs, because that's definitely intriguing. I mean, he's still a guy who throws hard. I think he's still sitting around. Yeah, sits around 96 still. Just interesting. Another guy similar. And I feel like him and Leclerc's got a little bit more of a track record, but Lopez too is, you know, good stuff. Just like get in the right organization where he can, put it all together. That'll be fun to see.
Yeah. I think the Cubs actually figured something out with him because they, told him to stop throwing his sinker and start throwing his four-seamer more, which I think makes sense. The four-seamer isn't super great, so maybe they did something to it. The stuff plus didn't change too much after coming over. It actually got worse. But I don't know. He had success after turning away from his sinker and turning more to his four-seamer. So maybe there's something in there. I mean, I'd like to see some sort of change. If some guy's going to have success, if I'm going to buy into that, I want there to be something tangible. So at least a slight pitch mix change there suggests that this is, you know, something that he can continue into 2025. But yeah, Jorge Lopez has had spurts of being a closer caliber pitcher. We'll see if he gets that opportunity in 2025. And I'll make the last pick and I'll just take your guy on there so I don't have to think about it. Chris Martin, the lead singer of Coldplay. He has now decided to start pitching baseballs. Just kidding. That joke is, I think I do that every single time I hear his name. Nonetheless, Chris Martin, one of the, maybe the best command relief pitcher in baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, you never see walk rates like this anymore. 1.7% walk rate. I mean, that was across 44 innings. And this is a guy with a career 3.2% walk rate. So there's something about Chris Martin who still is able to produce solid strikeout rates while walking nobody. And, you know, strikeout to walk rate, strikeout minus walk rate is the most predictive stat of them all. So if you look at his and you see, okay, he's got a 27%, 26% strikeout minus walk rate, that is super elite, even for somebody his age. So I think that he's going to get a job somewhere, whether or not at 39, that's going to be a significant setup role. Probably not, but regardless, I still think he's going to have success on the mound. If you are in a really deep league and you need whip, if you need somebody who's good in the whip department, this is your man.
Yeah. He's a whip specialist who will add some strikeouts here and there as well. Mm-hmm. He's another one of these old, he's 38. He's just in a similar vein to like a David Robertson, where he's just, you know, cutter. He's not full time cutter, but he's 46% cutter, 92 miles per hour, just locates it really well, has pretty good movement. So yeah, it's that cutter profile makes me not too worried about him aging as much as some of these other guys.
Totally. All right. Well, that wraps up the draft. Of the guys we didn't draft, though, who do you like the most? I'll read off a list real quick so that people know who is still available, who we avoided drafting. And, you know, there's definitely an argument to be made for any of these guys to be included, especially at the end of our draft. But the top remaining guys, Joe Kelly, James Karinchak, Phil Maton, Ryan Stanek, Scott Barlow, Andrew Chafin, Danny Coulom, Jonathan Weisiga, and Andrew Kittredge. Who do you like the most in that group?
I mean, Coulom, if he's healthy, is like a runaway there, but I this, I'm wonder, you know, you'll probably want to talk about him too. But if he's not healthy, I mean, Andrew Kittredge is coming off a really good season. It was a little fluky, and he's also up there in age, but I would also think Kittredge probably gets a little bit overpaid this offseason. But of this group, I feel the safest with Kittredge being a contributor next, like a legit contributor next year for a full season.
Okay, you know, if you're going, go ahead,
sorry. I would say like Barlow, Matone. I mean, they have like they have some upside there, Stanek, but there's just also a lot of red flags as well.
Yeah, I'm gonna go even more upside, and I'm gonna go with Loizaga and Karinchak. I think both of those guys are really interesting.
Those are Dodgers. Those are Dodgers, totally. Like flyers. Those
Karinchak, I've always liked as a pitcher. And I want to make sure that's how that's understood. But he, I don't know, just watching him pitch, I never understood how people could hit his stuff. It's just so ridiculous. And he really has only had spurts of success because of his inability to control his pitches. But his stuff is so good. And he's had such good strikeout rates throughout his career. And even in the minor leagues last year, it was just like he was dealing with injuries the whole year. So if he can come back healthy, I would think that some team is going to be able to figure things out with him. And the same can be said with Loizaga. He just didn't pitch a lot last year because he was injured. So if a team can give him an opportunity to be healthy, I would love to see him get back to some of the stuff he was doing before. I mean, 2021, 2.17 ERA across 70 innings. The strikeouts aren't huge for him, but he's not a guy who walks anybody. So even with a 24% strikeout rate, he was still pretty close to a strikeout minus walk rate of 20%. So his whiff's going to be low. I think the ERA is going to be solid. I'd love to see a team help Loizaga get back on track.
Yeah, those are two of the more interesting reclamation projects they'll definitely get a chance at some point, but yeah, what's left there, who knows, but they're both relatively young, so it'll be interesting to see.
Totally. All right, well, to recap our draft, I drafted Jeff Hoffman, Kenley Jansen, Blake Treinen, Jimmy Garcia, David Robertson, Aroldis Chapman, Jose Leclerc, and Chris Martin. And Rick drafted Tanner Scott, Kirby Yates, Clay Holmes, Paul Sewald, AJ Minter, Carlos Estevez, Tommy Canley, and Jorge Lopez. Tweet, or I don't know, sound off in the comments below who's got the better team. But yeah, that will do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your something, plug your social media and anything else you're working on this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still on X/Twitter, but also on Blue Sky and Threads at I Am Rick Graham. As of what I'm doing now, I'm just started to look at some save plus holds rankings. I want to get something out just to have it on paper for end of the month or so. That's actually probably what I'm thinking we talk about next time. We don't talk about holds a lot, but if there's not a lot of free agent talk, we can dive into holds a little bit next year, because we've already talked about closer ranks. So we can talk about those guys who weren't on the closer ranks and what it means for holds leagues, since we're in the off season and it might be a little slow until free agent relievers start signing.
We'll keep it fast. We'll keep it fast and loose.
Yeah.
I am not on Blue Sky or Threads.
Why not?
Yet. I don't know. I think it's just giving me more reason to go on social media, and that's the last thing I need. So I really try to limit my social media usage, and I try to limit it to just baseball stuff, which is why I like Twitter. Same. But I'm seeing the transition, and right now I feel like 50% of fantasy baseball Twitter is probably moved over to Blue Sky, and maybe not, like maybe they're doing both, but I don't know what I'm waiting for, right. But we'll see if I do it. You guys will be first to know. But you can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. I don't have anything coming out before our next podcast, so check in to In the Pen in a couple of weeks. We will talk to you all then.